Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Today, in studio, we turn the spotlight on actor, writer, comedian, all-around good guy, I think. We'll find out. Steve Agee. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
The buzz is beginning. That's right. Welcome to AfterBuzz TV. My name is Michael Rippey. Catch me on social media at Mike Rips. And we have in studio comedian, actor, writer, a lot of things, super tall man, Steve Agee. What's up?
How's it going?
Look, you're in it. There you go.
Funny, my head cut off.
We're about the same height. That's not the only thing we have in common.
Both redheads.
We have a lot in common. We're going to get to that. Something you're not even expecting.
I just lower
first,
my chair. First,
you have a new movie out. It's out today.
Boy band.
It's what you knew that your life was going to be like. You knew you were going to be in a boy band.
I should have been in a boy band. I have a great singing voice. No, I have a horrible singing voice.
Don't lie.
I'm shocked that they hired me.
I'm not. But let's before we get to that, thank you for joining us on AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On series. Make sure to subscribe, review, rate, tell all your friends, then do it again and again, and
again.
Tell your family and everybody, and make sure to give Steve Agee a like, some love all over social media.
Please.
And, maybe me too. But it was just your birthday. Happy belated
50th.
Birthday. 50th. I didn't want to say it, but okay, there you go. You're over the hill.
I can't believe it. Senior discounts are just right around the corner.
So you celebrated up in, I don't want too much information, but you celebrated up in San Luis Obispo.
The Madonna Inn.
And you said, I listened to a podcast that you do. You said to check it out. So I did, and I wasn't sure it felt like the colorful version of Bad Times at the El Royale.
Yeah, totally.
And each room has names.
Each room is themed. Some of the rooms are incredibly themed and colored, and there's a room that's all blue, one that's all pink, and then there's a handful of rooms that it just feels like they were like, oh, we built too many rooms. Go to a thrift store and buy anything. And it's there's a wagon bed. There's a bed that's made out of a horse and buggy wagon with green, some of them make no sense at all.
What room were you in?
I was in a room called the Karen with a C that was incredible. Everything in it was pink, bright, bright pink.
But you didn't choose that. They chose it for you?
I chose that one for the photo ops, yeah.
Because you love pink. That's right. You're a photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a hobby of yours, photography. Yeah. All right, without this being complete advertisement for the Madonna Inn, which apparently is great.
Check it out. It looks cool. I highly recommend
Fantastic it. Fantastic for Instagram. But let's talk about it. Your movie. It's out today. It's Boy Band. That's right. I watched it. I got a screener. It was great. What goes into making a movie like this, and how was it for you?
It was, everything for me is easy as an actor. I literally just get a call and say, show up here on this date. Say these words, and it's so something like that is super easy for me. Other than the singing stuff, and I don't like to fly that much, so that's the most stressful part is me getting to places.
So where did you guys film?
Dayton, Ohio.
Capital of America, basically, right?
Right in the center.
And how long were you filming?
It was 2 weeks.
Okay.
Two solid weeks in Dayton and Yellow Springs, which Yellow Springs is their claim to fame, I guess, is that's where Dave Chappelle lives.
Uh-huh.
And this is so bizarre. I've never been to Ohio. I have a bunch of friends in common with Chappelle and had never met him. And I get off the airplane super early in the morning, and the director picks me up, and he's like, you want to go get some coffee? And I was like, sure. And so we drive into Yellow Springs, which is just this little hippie town. It's just this liberal island in the middle of conservative Ohio, and there's no Starbucks. It's all just mom and pops. It's really cool. And Joel, the director, is like, oh, let's go into this coffee shop. It's just a tiny little hole in the wall. Open the door, first person I see is Chappelle just sitting there reading a book.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Supporting the community.
And did you meet him then or no? You
just we both looked at each other kind of like, oh, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Hello. It was literally just, oh, hey, how's it going?
Love it.
Yeah.
So the movie, it's the story of a late 90s boy band that got old and fat, directed by the Levinson brothers.
Yeah. They could have left that out of the description.
So you say it's easy. Acting is easy. You just show up. You show places. But you did say that singing is not. So what did you do differently or how did you go? Did you just go for it or did you actually practice?
I just went for it.
Singing in the mirror in the bathtub?
I showed up like a few. It's so funny because Joel sent me all the songs beforehand. And he's like, here are the songs you're going to have to sing and learn. And I just kind of listened to him once and was like, I think I got it. And never listened to him again until I showed up like 2 days early. And he's like, let's go to the studio. And then we started singing. I was like, oh, I should have practiced this stuff because I can't. It's all out of my range, and it was just like a really long, stressful day of me like trying to reach notes that were just a little bit out of my range.
Yeah,
but it ended. I think it actually helped the movie. Me being a shitty singer. Am I allowed to say?
You can say what you want. Your character Johnny. You're part of the Heartthrob Boys. I'm watching
with a Z,
right? With the Z, of course.
Yeah.
I'm watching, and immediately I'm thinking that you must have taken inspiration from Weekend at Bernie's. And
Weekend
so,
of Bernie.
For your character, I mean, did you at any point look to that movie and think maybe I should recreate some of this in my character? I don't want to give away everything.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I didn't even put those two together, okay. But yeah.
Okay.
I can absolutely see where you would think that.
So it's out now. It's on demand, on digital. You can get it anywhere. That's right, March 5th. That's today.
As opposed to the 8th, which some people might
You can
have
get thought. It on the 8th, though.
You can get it on
but
the 8th.
But get it now. Why wait, right?
You get it today or the 6th, 7th, or 8th.
So you have done a lot of acting, you know, comedy, writing, and I want to get to a lot of it. But first, I went to your Wikipedia page, right? It says years active, 2000 to present. So what the hell were you doing before 2000?
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
My first TV job in L.A., was the Sarah Silverman program was my first acting job.
That's
and
right.
That was like 2007.
Yeah.
Before that, I was a writer on Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Yeah.
And that started probably around 2004, 2003. And before that, I worked in reality TV for forever. Like I worked on Real World, Road Rules, Osbourne's, Temptation Island, Joe Millionaire.
As a writer? As a
story editor, assistant story editor, yeah.
So what does that entail? Like you get them drunk before the taping?
You watch. So my first jobs were what's called a logger, where you watch the actual tapes that come in off the road, and you have to just watch every single tape and write into a computer what's happening on each tape that the writers then go, oh, there's a fight here. Let's put that in the episode. Let's use this. It was just mind-numbing work. It was brutal.
So it's
and I did it for years.
Years active 2000. I was hoping you were going to be active since you were born. Obviously, I don't understand.
No.
2000.
I'm a robot. I came online
it's
in 2000.
You said Jimmy Kimmel. I have that here. I'll skip ahead for a second. 337 shows that you write. How many?
No,
were
that's
you
the weird
for?
Thing what about that's the weird thing about IMDb. If you write on a show, it just says you wrote
forever.
For every episode. I was a writer for maybe. I was a researcher for years, a writer for maybe like 6 months.
Were you there at the start? Because I remember when he started his show. I remember the first week he started his show, he
Snoop
used to
Dogg.
Actually give out, it was, you could drink.
Yeah, there was a bar, the audience
like
could
drink.
And then somebody threw up in the audience, and that was it.
That was it. But I remember when he first came on. I mean, so were you there then, or after
I started
that?
Like a month after that.
This is perfect. Then my question is: did you know at that time, like, could you feel that he was going to become this late night superstar, and where he is now? Or I mean, now it's everybody knows Jimmy Kimmel. At the time, it wasn't the same, right?
I felt like given enough time, he could become what he is now. I mean. Famously, like Conan O'Brien was, his show was literally like week to week at first, sometimes month to month, like constantly in danger of being canceled. And that's very common with also just regular narrative TV shows where if they just don't give them enough of a chance. And I was like, Jimmy's just starting. And if they give him the time, which they did, he really nailed it. you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's
plus, he also had, like, the man show and everything, so he had a little bit of experience going
in. He had some, of course. And,
radio.
Some of the writers that have come out of the Jimmy Kimmel Show, I mean, you were there.
Yeah.
You know, you have Cousin Sal, Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons,
I mean, legends.
Yeah.
In their own right.
Yeah.
Okay, not to talk all about Jimmy Kimmel, but let's talk about. I want to know more about movies. You have a new movie, not just today, that your next film, right?
Yeah,
and,
right.
And tell Brightburn. Us. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I have a very small part in this, but I'm really stoked. It's a movie that James Gunn produced. James's brothers wrote. It's like a horror. It's like a horror superhero movie. It's called Brightburn. It stars Elizabeth Banks and. David Denman, who you would know as Roy on The Office. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like Superman's origin story of him as a kid, but if he had decided to just be an asshole and, like, just go full evil. It is really dark and really messed up.
Do you have a favorite type of film that you're a part of? Because, I mean, you're obviously Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I mean, you got the sci-fi, the superhero thing. Do you steer towards that, or is that just what you've chosen?
It's just kind of where it goes. I love doing, I mean, Guardians for a million reasons, not just because it was good, but it was like the only big budget movie I've ever worked on, and it was just like the scheduling was so great.
So for people that are watching, either aspiring comedians, actors, hosts, whatever, the big budget movie, right? I mean, Guardians, one of the biggest ever. Tell us a little bit behind the scenes. When you're there, what's that like for you?
Well, like, for example, with Boy Band, we had 2 weeks to shoot the whole movie. So we had to move really fast. We would go in to shoot a scene, and it would be like, you have 2 takes to do this and move on. Guardians, we go in and would do one scene for like 3 days. Like, they had like 6 months to do that movie. So it's like, I remember we shot a scene in the forest with Rocket, and it's where you first see all the Ravagers and Taserface. And we shot my footage and Taserface's footage first. And then 3 days later, as we were finishing it, James said, we're going to reshoot your stuff because things have kind of changed, and they just had the luxury of being like, yeah, let's just do it over. And there was also Sylvester Stallone was in that movie, and he did a scene. They only had him for like 2 days. They had him on a Friday and Monday, and they shot his scene at like the robot whorehouse. They shot his scene one day, and then I saw James for dinner that night, and I was like, hey man, Stallone, that was crazy, right? And he's like, yeah, he goes, there's just something I wish he would have done different. And I'm afraid to call him and ask him to do it over again. And it's fine. And then the very next day, Stallone called him. He didn't even know his number. James just saw a number he didn't know and was like, hello? And it was Stallone. And he's like, hey, I don't want to be a jerk, but I don't think I nailed that one take. Can we do it over again? And James was like, James didn't let him know that, yeah, I want to do that. He's like, all right, I guess if you want to do it, we can do
it. Cool.
Yeah, he played it cool, but and they had the time. They're just like, all right, we'll fit it in.
So back to Boy Band. You're 2 weeks. So what's that like? Is it feel rushed in 2 weeks? Does it?
Yeah. It's rushed, but I was saying this earlier to somebody. We were rehearsing every spare minute. So just because of that reason. I'm a person that doesn't like to rehearse a lot, so that was driving me crazy. But looking back, I was like, oh, that helped us get through this a lot easier.
And you don't like to rehearse because you feel like it's just more authentic if you're just doing it for the
Yeah, because we would rehearse, like, we would show up in the morning in the trailer to shoot one scene, and Joel would want to rehearse a scene from the following day. He's like, hey, we have a few minutes, let's rehearse this scene from tomorrow. And I'm just like, I'm just trying to remember my lines from today,
yeah, sure.
You know, but it was for him, and it ended up being useful and very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I guess everyone has their own methods, right?
Yeah, totally.
So would you say Guardians was your favorite movie set to be on, though?
Set to be on? Absolutely.
It was just
wild,
can only imagine.
Yeah, it was really, and I was there for like 2 months, and I worked maybe a total of 12 days.
Yeah, so what are you doing when you're not working?
A lot of times I would still visit the set because I'm still like a little kid when I walk onto a TV or movie set. I'm just like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I'm totally overwhelmed. And that was a set where, you know, there's that, boy, I'm forgetting the name of the planet, but where all the people were gold, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
And their set, their palace was just all blue screen. So you literally walk in and there is nothing there. And it's the scene where they're flying their spaceships, but they're doing them remote control.
Yeah.
And so it's just a bunch of guys sitting on like a blue bench. And you're going, this looks weird. And then you see the movie, you're like, this is not what it looked like at all. But then there was scenes like Us in the Forest where they had built an entire forest inside a giant soundstage. So it's amazing still for me to walk in and see that.
You said you feel like a kid still. So was there a moment on a movie set, whether it's Guardians, whether it's Boy Band, at any point where you just really were like, that's the person, that's that person, wow.
Yes. Well, on Guardians when... It was one of my days off, and I went just. It was that scene where they were doing they were chasing like Star Lord and everybody, and they were flying their remote control ships. And I was walking onto the set, and I opened the door to walk in. And as I opened the door to walk in, Kurt Russell walked out and literally bumped into me. And didn't stop, but just with we just kept walking. But he's like, "Hey, you're tall," and he kept walking. And I was just like, "Oh my God, that was Kurt Russell!" Like I was just speechless.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was. I'm still just like, "Wow, I bumped into Kurt Russell." Yeah. Have not met him since. Had no scenes with him, but I was like, "Wow, that was Kurt Russell."
Right. That's wild.
Yeah.
All right. So, Boy Band again. Make sure it's on demand. It's digital.
Yep.
So. I before we came on, I tell you, we have some stuff in common
beside
our height, which I won't let go.
And our red hair.
So I listened to, you're a podcast host too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're no doctors.
We're no doctors, yep.
And I listened to it. I want to talk about your
kidney
podcast.
Stones?
Yeah, well.
Do you get kidney stones?
No, oh, okay. No. Thank God.
I'm trying to anticipate where this is going.
No, you said that you were doing the keto diet.
Yes. Are you doing keto?
I did the keto diet for 30 days.
What'd you think?
It was incredible. I had a lot of mental focus and clarity. It was wild. But it was interesting because you were talking about how you did it. And how do you feel about it?
I can tell you the first week was a living hell.
Yeah.
Because I had a complete sugar addiction. So for the first week, and my trainer was also like, I need you for the first 2 weeks to just eat absolutely pure. He's like, you can have no sugar and no carbs.
Right.
He's like, after 2 weeks, we can introduce, you know, like 60 grams of carbs a day or whatever. I was like, all right. And so it was just for 5 days, all I could think about was sugar. Like from the time I opened, I don't know if you experienced this, but from the time I opened my eyes in the morning, my head, I was one day I woke up craving an Oreo cookie and cream blizzard, something I had not had in 20 years. And it's all I could think about the whole day. And then day six, I woke up and it was gone. I wasn't craving anything. I felt like I only needed to eat just for fuel, not for, oh, I'm bored or, oh, that would taste good. It was like, I'm going to have some eggs and start my day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. And then I had a kidney stone, had to have a kidney stone surgery where they put a stent up through my urethra into my kidney, and they were like, you cannot exercise now with this stent in because it could fall out. So for about a week and a half, I was just on my couch, and the depression started to set in because I couldn't go to the gym. And to make up for the depression, I was like, well, I guess a pizza would make me feel pretty good. And so I just started eating carbs. I was going nuts. And I'm now on the tail end of that, and I'm back, you know, into keto.
So do you do it just regularly, consistently? Do you do it in phases?
It's still really new to me. I started keto in January.
Yeah, me too.
And it was something that I was like, I don't think I can maintain this. This seems really hard. And that was in the first 2 weeks. Once my trainer was like, you can have 60 grams of carbs a day, I was like, oh, that's... You can have some hash browns with breakfast or something. I was like, okay, this is doable. And also I wasn't craving things. So I was like, oh, this is a totally doable diet. And then I still feel like it is doable. You know, as long as you stick with it and don't, you know, once you go off the tracks, it's been really hard for me the past few days to like
get back
on it.
Yeah. Well, I want to know just because I know your podcast.
And I lost like 25 pounds in like a month.
You think you said 18 pounds in the first 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely, I mean, from fad diets, whatnot. But I know you're not a doctor, as you say in your podcast.
No doctor.
But good information. Speaking of the podcast,
yeah.
Talk about it. What do you get from doing the podcast?
It's so funny because I started the podcast. I had a girlfriend, actually a girl I met doing the movie Boy Band. She was working in the crew in Ohio. And we dated for a while, and at one point she was like, you should do this as a podcast, because I was just always like, I think I have bed bugs. I think I have this. This is crazy. She's like, why don't you do a podcast about this? Because I had another podcast where I just, you know, would shoot the shit with people. She's like, you should do a podcast about how crazy you are and neurotic you are about medicine and stuff like that. And so I was talking to Busy Phillips one day, and because I saw her do an Instagram story about her freaking out in a MRI machine and like having to jump out of it. And so we started it kind of humorously, like to be funny, like, look at us, we're crazy, which was really good. And we were doing really well. And then we started having guests on who had like actual medical problems, like depression, or another guest who had a stroke. Another guest was in a coma. And those episodes started getting huge downloads, and people would start writing in going, I had this happen to me, or I had the same thing but didn't know what it was. Thank you so much. And so now it's like I literally have guests in who – I had a guest in last week who's got terminal cancer. He's dying of cancer. And I was just like, I never would have asked someone like that to be on the podcast. Yeah. But they were like, yeah, I want to come on and talk about it.
Okay.
And it's like those are the ones where I actually feel like I'm – doing something useful.
What, do you feel like it's therapeutic? Is it comedic?
Oh, for sure.
Is it pleasurable? All
it's
the above?
All the above. And it's super therapeutic. I don't feel as... For years, this is the time of year where I would hate going out because it's flu season.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I always get a flu shot, I'm like, oh, I don't want to go to a show tonight. There's just going to be sick people there. Or I have to fly to Nashville on Thursday. I'm like, I would have been like, oh, I don't want to. And I was always checking the CDC flu map to see how widespread the flu was in the country. And it would affect what I would do. And now I'm just like, if I get sick, I get sick, you know.
So that's because you're a hypochondriac, that you used to check every single thing.
And now I don't anymore.
How'd you break out of it?
By interviewing people who had actual problems, people who'd had strokes and stuff, people who had gotten the H1N1 virus and had to be put into comas.
The avian flu and stuff?
Yeah. We had Nicole Sullivan, who was on Mad TV. She is the one person I've met in my life who actually got the H1N1 virus and had to be put into a coma for like a week because her temperature was like 106 and they couldn't lower it. And I was like, I guess I can afford to get a cold every once in a while.
Kind of put everything into like relative terms, huh?
Huge, yeah, totally. Yeah.
That's how you can break out of hypochondria, I guess.
Yep.
So your last podcast, the most recent episode that I've heard that I think is out, you recorded it from your car.
That was right. That was on my birthday.
It was a birthday recording. You had limited amount of time.
I was on the road and I was like, I have to put this out.
But it showed dedication. You got it through. But my best place to record a podcast, is it your car?
It's not bad. There's no distractions. The outside noise gets a little annoying at times. And the fact that you have to have the engine off. It sometimes starts to get a little hot in the car, but it's actually really good. It actually sounds really good if you're not by like a highway or something.
Passing vehicles or something.
It's like a sound booth, yeah. It's not bad.
Car studio. So how many have you recorded in your car?
I've recorded like 3 or 4 in my car. Usually when I'm working and I'm like, oh, I got to do this.
When you're not recording in your car, where do you record?
Starburns Studios, which is just down Burbank Boulevard here, just down the street. Where they record Rick and Morty and a bunch of other great podcasts. Yeah.
Speaking of great podcasts, what's your favorite podcast to listen to?
I love Conan O'Brien's new podcast. That one's really good. I like Dax Shepard's new podcast, Armchair Expert. Super Ego. I don't know if you know that one. That's like sketch comedy, but it's all improvised. that one is – that's one of my all-time favorite podcasts.
And how do you – like, where do you come up with where you're finding podcasts? Because there's just so many – everybody's getting a podcast now. It's all the rage.
I know.
So how do you, how can you cut through some of that to find what's good, or do you just base it on recommendations?
It's usually recommendations.
Okay.
Or sometimes I'll click on a podcast and it'll say, listeners also downloaded this, and I'll check it out. And even the ones that I really love, like – Mark Maron's podcast or Pete Holmes' podcast, I'm very selective. Like, if I see a person, I'm like, I'm not a fan of that person. I'm not going to listen to it this week. Or
yeah,
it just depends on who the guests are a lot of the time.
Sure. Well, so to go along with the podcast theme and how there's so many, one of the things I do when I listen to podcasts is – tell me if I'm normal or crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm probably crazy. I listen to them at 2 speed, so it's just like real fast.
Whoa, you do?
Have you ever tried that?
I have.
Yeah,
like, but one usually and a half on or accident. Two or... Usually, I pull it up on my phone, and then as I'm putting it away, I'll accidentally hit the 2 speed.
Yeah,
and then it takes me like a minute or so to be like, something's off here. I'm like, oh my God, it's going twice as fast.
Yeah. That's what I do. I'm crazy. People think I'm weird about it. But I thought about that because when you recorded your podcast, you talked about you were in a rush at that time. And so I was thinking, well, I'm always in a rush, and this is part of the way I get through my rushes.
Yeah.
So when does Busy return to your podcast? She's just too busy for it, or what's happening?
Well, I just saw her a couple days ago, and she's like, I really want to do the podcast again.
She misses it.
Yeah, and so I think once a week I'll just go to her office where she records her e-show, and we'll just record there.
What's the difference for you when you're working with her in the podcast or you're going at it alone? Is there a preference?
Absolutely with her, 100%. That woman can talk like – I mean, that's why she has a talk show. It takes all the pressure off of me. Anytime you hear me do a podcast by myself, the first thing I usually say at the beginning is, well, this is probably going to be short because I don't know what I'm going to talk about. And I usually still end up talking an hour, but I'm like...
I can confirm that.
But I'm like really... I'm a lot less stressed when Busy's there because she can just really talk forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's good at it.
So you're a comedian. Mm-hmm. Did you know... when you were young, this is what I want to do, where you were like a class clown, where you know, I'm always wondering about that.
I knew 100% I wanted to be a comedian by the time I was 11 years old.
And how so?
Someone for either Christmas or my birthday got me a little transistor radio with like a mono input for a single earbud. And I would lay in bed Sunday nights, Dr. Demento was on. Dr. Demento, for you millennials, was like this syndicated comedy guy who had like this extensive collection of comedy records. So he would have a show every Sunday night. It was syndicated all over the country where he would play everything from Weird Al Yankovic albums to George Carlin, to stand-up, everything, sketch albums, Cheech and Chong. And that's how I got turned on to comedy when I was 11. And the first album I ever bought with my own money as a kid at 11 years old was a George Carlin album called A Place for My Stuff. I didn't buy music for years. It was all stand-up. And I didn't understand half the jokes.
Sure.
I just loved hearing the people laugh. And I was like, I want to do this, but I didn't know how to do it.
How did you do it? That's what I'm curious about. So you find out you love this, but then you're 11 years old. I mean...
A friend told me that there was an open mic. Like, I grew up in Riverside, just like an hour away from here. And he's like, oh, there's a comedy club in Montclair, which is just like halfway between LA and Riverside. And so we went to that, and I just did stand up at an open mic, kind of on a dare. And I brought a bunch of my friends, so they were all laughing.
Were you nervous?
So nervous. And then after that, the guy who booked it was like, oh, you should come back next week. And I didn't bring anybody back the next week. It was just dead silent. But I had been bitten by the bug, and I just kept doing it off and on.
I think this is something that not only I'm curious about, but I think a lot of people when they watch, I think the thing that probably people get the most concerned about are like, how could they do that, is just being nervous up there. So how long are you I mean, you must work through that just from repetitions. Yeah. But is there ever times where, like, right before you go on, you get nervous for a second, or you get up there, you get nervous, or you just done it so many times that practice makes perfect or something like that?
Practice makes perfect. It takes a lot of bombing and a lot of awkward moments to finally get to a point where you're like, this isn't going to kill me.
Do you have a bombing moment that just stands out above all the others?
Yeah, I did. When the Sarah Silverman program was still on the air, one day Sarah said, hey, do you want to come up to Stanford and open for me at Stanford University? And I was like, I don't have a lot of material. I have like 5 minutes of material. Oh, were you having ear issues?
We were good.
I was, yeah. And she's like, I just need you to do 20 minutes. And I go, I don't have 20 minutes worth of material. This is like 2007. And, she's like, just bring up a DVD of some of your weird short films. Because part of what got me my job on her TV show was I would make these weird short films just out of boredom around my apartment. Like, there's one called Cry Baby where it's like a 5-minute video of me walking around the apartment naked and crying, brushing my teeth and crying, taking a dump on the toilet crying, showering, like, to like some weird like Pink Floyd song, and and they were all really weird and just avant-garde videos. And Sarah goes, you just have to do 5 minutes of stand-up and then show some of your weird videos. I was like, all right. And so I go up there and I bring my DVD of videos and we go in, and for some reason in my head I think we're going to be doing stand-up in like the student union or the cafeteria. But they walk us into this 2,000-seat theater, and I was like, oh, no, I'm not ready for this. This is too big, and I immediately had diarrhea, and I was like, this is a nightmare. And I asked the handler who was with us, I show him the DVD, and I go, who do I give this to show some short films? And she goes, oh, we don't have
a DVD player or something?
We don't have a DVD player. And, like, Sarah started laughing uncontrollably. And I was like, Sarah, what am I going to do? She's like, figure it out. And so, oddly enough, this isn't the bombing part of the story. So I'm, like, I'm just sitting in the green room for, like, 2 hours just writing whatever I can think of. I go out, and because I'm on Sarah's TV show, everyone's laughing at anything I say. And I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm riffing and, like, did 20 minutes. And it was awesome. And I was super cocky then. And the very next day, I fly back to LA and had a show at the Improv. And I was super confident and cocky. And they introduced me. I walk up on stage and say my first joke, and it is dead silent. Everything I said was dead silence. And I literally did the same exact thing I did the night before. And what had taken me 20 minutes took me about 4 minutes because I was just rushing. I was like, I want to get the fuck off the stage. I got to get out of here. And so I just rushed through it, and I was drenched in sweat. I was terrified. I walked off the stage. I was like, I don't think I could do this ever again. And it was like a few weeks before I went back and did it. And then I was like, you know, no one threw anything at me, I guess.
Yeah. Has anyone ever thrown anything at you?
No.
Hecklers. I'm always curious from a comedian. Is a heckler at your show, I guess it depends on the comedian, but do you actually enjoy that? Does that make it easier, or is it more difficult?
I hate it.
I
hate it. Some people love it. That's some right. people thrive right. with the interaction with an audience. I did a show at the Improv with Marilyn Rice Cub, who you may know as Chloe from 24, and yep. she was on Mr. Show. She's very funny. And I was doing a show with Brendan Small from Metalocalypse, and I went up, and there was just a guy talking in the audience, and I kind of chose to ignore him. Brendan kind of talked to him a little bit, but ignored him mostly. And then whoever our next guest was ignored him. And then Mary Lynn went up and just unloaded on. Like, she started her normal set, and within 3 minutes, this guy was talking, and she just put the mic down and started screaming at him. You mother, bah, 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 bah. Like, going to, for like 5 minutes, just screaming at this rude asshole. And everyone in the back of the room, all the comedians were like, oh my God, this is beautiful. Like, she totally, like, destroyed this guy.
So we're
I don't have that in me.
We're here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You talked about the improv. I'm sure you know Laugh Factory, Comedy Store, all of them. Is there a preference? Do you have a preference not just here in LA, but a city that you like to perform comedy in that you find it's better at, you know, for you?
There's like, I don't tour a lot, but there's a couple towns I really love doing stand up in. Portland is one. Portland's got a really great comedy scene, and all the people that come out to shows are just huge comedy fans. San Francisco is another one that I love. And just here in LA, I don't do a lot of the clubs. I'll do the improv. I love doing Largo. Mm-hmm. And I love doing, there's a new theater called the Dynasty Typewriter, which is a venue that's only been open for like a year, but Adam Sandler recorded a lot of his Netflix special in there.
Oh, really? Okay.
And, it's down by, MacArthur Park, close to downtown, and it's just this little, you know, 200-seat theater, and it's
intimate,
really good. Yeah, they're really nailing it.
So your comedy, what kind of style do you have?
It's more like storytelling stuff. It's I don't write like setups and punchlines. I'm really bad at that, which is probably why I didn't last very long at Kimmel. I'm like a joke writer. There was one time at Kimmel when we would go to the writers' meeting, and then afterwards they would send out an email going, here's the stuff Jimmy wants people to write jokes for the monologue. And it's usually stuff that's in the news. And there was one story where Donald Trump, this was like 2007 or 8, Donald Trump called Martha Stewart a moron. It's like on TV or something. Yeah, she's a moron. And so in the breakdown for the monologue, you know, our head writer, Steve, sends out the email and he's like, Donald Trump calls Martha Stewart a moron. I misread it. And I read it as Donald Trump calls Martha Stewart a Mormon. That's what I thought it said. So I wrote
jokes about this.
So many Mormon jokes. I wish I could remember them, but I wrote so many Mormon jokes and then emailed them to Jimmy. 10 minutes later, I get an email back from Jimmy going, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I go, what? And then I look at the sheet and I go, oh my God, it's moron. I go, I'm the moron. I'm just horrible at writing jokes. So a lot of my stuff is more story and anecdotal.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Mormon. Mormons.
Martha Stewart is a Mormon. That didn't even make sense. I can't believe I didn't even question it.
All right. We got a little bit of time left. You are super passionate about photography now.
Love it. It's my biggest hobby.
It is. And yeah. Has this been a recent trend that you've gotten into? Is it because of Instagram?
It actually started at Kimmel. I realized very early on that being there and being backstage, I had access to a lot of cool stuff. I saw a lot of cool stuff being shot, like pre-tape bits being shot backstage with celebrities. And it was really the musical acts. Like Jimmy has a really big stage out in the parking lot behind,
sure.
Like a huge like rock stage. It's amazing. Huh. And I had just this all access pass. And I was like, I should be taking photos of this. And so I bought my first real, you know, Canon digital, you know, SLR camera, and I had access to all the cameramen there, and I would just say, hey, how do I make it more out of focus in the background? I like it when it's like out of focus. And they would tell me, oh, you got to do this and do this. And that's how I learned, was from cameramen telling me what to do.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's something that's evolved, and now
in fact, for my birthday, when I went up to the Madonna Inn in San Luis Obispo, I went there just for the photo ops. I told my friends, I'm like, I want to go to San Luis Obispo with a bunch of my friends. We'll rent all the weird colored rooms. I'll bring my lights and my cameras, and we'll just take weird photos.
Did you get the weird photos?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. They're all up on my Instagram.
And your Instagram, Steve Agee?
At Steve Agee. Yeah, that's me across all the social networking.
Right, because you actually were on Twitter from like the early on.
From the very beginning.
You had, I mean, even says on your Wikipedia page how you talked about how everyone that followed you, that first, 5,000, you're going to shout them all out by name.
I had like 2,000 followers for a long time. Yep. And then I was on there for forever. And then Sarah Silverman joined. and within a day had like 5,000 followers. Understandably, she's Sarah Silverman, and like nobody knew who I was. And so I saw that she had joined and got like 5,000 followers overnight. So I said, hey, if I can get 5,000 followers, this was a Sunday, by the end of the week, I will do a live streaming video. And I forget the service I used at the time. I go, I'll do a live streaming video where I will read every follower's name. Username. And so people started following me a little more, but it wasn't like going up huge. And then James Gunn saw my tweet and he retweeted it and it started going up a little more. But this was before James was who he is now. But he knew Rainn Wilson because James used to be married to Jenna Fischer from The Office. And so Rain saw that tweet and he retweeted it and my numbers really started going up fast. And I started to get worried. And I have a friend who texted me. He's like, hey, man, I did some math. And he's like, if this happens, it would take you like 6 hours to read all those names. And I was like, ugh. So I just dropped it. I didn't say anything else. And then people had to the end of the day on Friday. And then Friday comes along and Oprah Winfrey did a show about Twitter that day where she had Ashton Kutcher on and Jimmy Fallon, who at the time had the most Twitter followers. And Oprah on the show signed up for Twitter. And so I was on a list because of the stunt. Someone at Twitter, because what Rain retweeted, put me on a list where I think they still have this. If you sign up for Twitter, there's a list of people that says recommend.
That's right, recommend. Follow. It. Yeah,
here's
suggested.
20 people we suggest you follow. And you are actually automatically following them unless you uncheck it.
Okay.
And so I was on that list. And Oprah signed up, and so, of course, every housewife in America signed up for Twitter that day.
Timing.
And my numbers started going up by thousands every, like, 10 minutes. It was crazy. Insane. And I was freaking out. I was like, this is too much. This is going to take me a weekend.
The plan has gone backwards.
And so I locked my account so no one could follow me. And then I read, you know, the whole next day, Saturday, I read everybody's name. It took me, like, 8 or 9 hours. And and then I unlocked it, and it just kept going on. Yeah. I got over 1 million followers at one point.
Yeah, crazy. The comedy in that is great. All right, we have just another minute left. I can't let you go without asking you one last thing, which is blank canvas. What's your ideal role?
Oh, I would love to play a villain, like in like. Not a horror movie, but like a sci-fi, like Taserface. Okay. I want to do something like that. It was also part of the reason why I hired a trainer and started doing keto. I was like, I don't look like a bad guy in a movie. I'm the stoner best friend.
Right.
And so I was like, I'm going to hire a trainer. The trainer I hired, by the way, is the guy who trained Zachary Levi for the new Shazam movie. And he trained Hilary Swank for Million Dollar Baby. And so I started working out with him and doing keto, and I was like, this isn't a guarantee, but it'll at least make my odds go up.
A couple months, and there you go. Now
it's going to take a while.
You put it out there. No, but you look good. You feel good?
I feel great. Yeah, yeah. No more kidney stones, so I'm great. Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much for stopping by Spotlight on here at AfterBuzz TV.
Thank you for having me, man.
All right, so it's Steve Agee. You guys can follow him all over social media. Check out a brand new movie, Boy Band. It's out today, on demand, on digital. Make sure to subscribe, review, like, comment, tell your friends to do the same, and then go back and do it all again. For AfterBuzz TV, my name is Michael Rippey. You can catch me on social media, at Mike Rips. And shout out to our engineer, Jeff Graham. He's the best in the business.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for watching, guys. We'll see you next time.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.